Another beautiful day. What shall I do first? I know.
Hello there, and you've joined us on this bright and beautiful morning. Me and the posse here will be with you all the way through to the afternoon. And we've also got today's text debate, which you can text in on 1811212. It's a serious subject today.
Of this.
Hello and welcome. This is Show 72 of Radio Clash, and this is Kleptomania, the Kleptones interview special. Hello and welcome to Show 72 of Radio Clash. And I said this is Kleptomania, which is the Kleptones interview special. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, the Kleptones released a new LP, which is a big thing in the mashup bootleg world. They released an album, or double album, called 24 Hours, which was a mashup concept album. Well, of course, the Grey album was a bit of a concept album, but certainly this had an overlying non-musical concept of spanning the duration of 24 hours musically and politically, and treating the music as almost as a sort of a story, an ambient background and a story at the same time. It's very good. And a couple of weeks ago, I got to speak to Eric Kleptone. Apologies for this not getting to you earlier, but things got in the way. And hope you enjoyed the interview with Eric. It went. I really enjoyed it. And I'm going to intersperse this with various tunes from the new album. And you should definitely check it out. You can check it out at www.kleptones.com. You can download it on torrent, or you probably may be able to find it elsewhere. It's well worth checking out, and it's worth checking out their back catalogue. And also, following the theme of 24 hours, every once in a while I dropped in a question about the time periods indicated on the album, and asked what Eric would be doing at each of those time periods, because some of them actually relate to what he would be doing anyway. They relate to personal experience. So I'll speak to you soon, well, after this little bit of music. This is Tim from Radio Clash, and this is the Kleptomania show, and I'm speaking to Eric from the Kleptones.
Hello.
Who's speaking to me from down in Brighton. It's Brighton, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, just off the seafront.
Has the weather been nice today?
It's lovely. It's spring's just starting to come into the air, and the whole town wakes up. It's the main industry of the town is entertainment, so it's a pretty grim place to be during. I mean, every day is like Sunday, I think is the appropriate term, but it does get a little bit grim during the winter. So it's a nice time of year now. Everyone's walking around with smiles on their faces. The sun's in the air, so it's all looking rather nice.
I mean, it's one of these things that in London everyone gets really kind of ditzy little bit of sun and slightly warmer, and like everyone, like you walk down the street and you feel like it's one man and your dog, and you're the dog and they're the sheep, and you're like, get out of the way, get out of the way.
Oh, totally.
Everyone's like, oh, it's sunny, my brain's gone.
Brighton fills up during the summer, so you suddenly, like, there's suddenly 25 times as many people on the street, and you're doing the same thing. You're just kind of like barging people out of the way, just like, get out of the way. I know where I'm going. You haven't got a clue, but I know where I'm going.
So, how long have you been? I mean, is the Kleptones just you, or is there a whole group of you?
It's not really fair to say that it's just me. I mean, I'm kind of the director, in terms of. It's really sort of my vision that dictates where it goes, but it's really unfair to say it's just me. People help out in various ways, whether it's inspiration or it's like genuine work, but I'm kind of the person that kind of sort of like I've got my hand on the rudder, so to speak, and kind of directs where things go in.
So you're like the sort of the conductor or creative director.
I think that's a pretty accurate way of describing it. But it's pretty unfair to say it's just me, even though I'm kind of the online presence.
Yeah.
But that's more because of that, because it's the I've got the direction really. So
how long have you been the Kleptones?
It came about in about 2002, as a side project of another band that I was working at the time that shall remain nameless. but that was it was just a way to explore more sample-based stuff. The band I was in, we were getting a lot of frustration from just not being able to clear the samples that we wanted to. And we were making a lot of music that we thought was fantastic, but we knew that we couldn't do anything with it. It was getting really frustrating. And one of the tracks that we had was a track called, funnily enough, called Kleptomaniac, which was, I mean, it was based around Stetsasonic vocal, and had an AC/DC loop in it and a few other bits and pieces, and we thought it was shit kicking, but you know, record labels were really into it as well, but the amount of money it was going to cost us to clear the samples meant that they just really weren't too enthused about investing in it unless we had a whole album of shit to back it up. And we were really frustrated because we thought this is just an abominable way to work. It doesn't really make sense at all. So the Kleptones was kind of a reaction to that. It was like, well, if we're going to do this, then let's just do it, and to hell with the consequences, you know. Mm. But that, I mean, the stuff that's on the website, the Never Trust Originality thing, were kind of the sort of the best of the early experiments of just going, okay, sod it, whatever samples, whether it's, you know, it's Steely Dan or it's Dexys Midnight Runners or whatever, if it's a loop from somewhere, don't bother trying to hide it, don't bother trying to, you know, sort of, you know, filter it down or fuck it up, just put it on there. If it sounds good and that's what you want to do, then do it. And at the same time, it just, you know, it made perfect sense to put it out on the website.
Now, since your date of birth, now ask yourself what this really work? Just a little bit of crunk with the monk appeal. Mix up the Henny Kravitz with the Ally McBeal. That's the recipe for this work of art. J Balls hit the beat, it was a hit from start. Introductions come without further ado. We got Lone Catalyst, my name is Asher Roo. Yes, I come from a crew who speak without words, but it's loud and clear when the shit gets heard. Kinda like how your mama can flash you that look, and right then and there, your ass gets shook. But when your boy goes to court, the face is tried, he drops his case, he cracks a smile. It's when two are in love, it's the feeling you get. Yo, you never forget, cause it's the ultimate. It's like a father to son, or a mother to daughter, a reflection of you. Yo, whatever the order, just think about what you know, and what you don't, and what you want. On the time right now, since your days are broke. Now ask yourself what it's really worth, and just think about what you know, and what you don't, and what you want. From the time right now since your day of birth. Now ask yourself what it's really worth.
Hey yo, it's Asher Roo, rocking with Jay Sands. Hey yo, that's my man, break down the game plan. Independently run, selling hand to hand. And it won't be over until you understand.
And that's the way it is, no lies for the biz. Either handle your biz, or handle your kid. That's the key to success, no more, no less. So if you can't decide to analyze before you stress.
I got seven heads who give me support, and from day one, yo, they hold down the fort. Family is a must to have people you trust. Until no ash, no ash, no and need, dust,
no
dust.
Need, no need to rush. Wrong turns can crush. Right paths for us, it'd be disaster us to come so far and lose it all tomorrow. So when I'm fed, I take my head and tilt it to the stars and just think about what you know and what you don't and what you want. From the time right now, such a day of birth. And ask yourself what it's really worth. Just think about what you know and what you don't and what you want. From the time right now since your day of birth. Now ask yourself what it's really worth.
I am just a poor boy though my story is seldom told. I have squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles.
Such a promise. Think about what you know and what you don't and what you want. From the time right now since your day of birth. Now ask yourself what it's really worth.
All lies and jest, still man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest.
So, was the Flaming Lips album your first album that you put out?
Yeah, it was the first proper album, and it was the first, mashup thing that we'd done. I mean, we did one track beforehand, which if it's still available, if you can trawl the annals of Gaibo, you can find it there somewhere. There was like a Madonna versus the Breeders thing. There was kind of an experiment just to see how it would work. But Yoshimi was the first thing that we really thought, okay, this is something worth doing. This is quite an interesting challenge.
I mean, I thought that album worked really well, and I thought it was interesting how you used the Flaming Lips, the things like you weren't so bothered about things like pitching things up and pitching things down for it to work. It wasn't like, oh, it's got, these things have got to be exactly the same. You just sort of went with the flow, how it would work, and how the how it seemed sort of more organic, rather than worrying too much, well, this song has to sound exactly the same as it was.
Yeah, no, well, there's a degree of creative license involved. I mean, actually, technically, it's quite weird listening back to Yoshimi now and thinking how much better we've got doing stuff over 2 years. It's really strange. Quite a few of the tracks on Yoshimi sound really slow because all the Yoshimi tracks are really slow.
Yeah, yeah.
But it seemed really natural, and if it doesn't sound wrong, it's like, why change it? Why fix it back to the way it used to be if it sounds okay as it is?
Well, I mean, that's what I find the difference between, say, you and Evolution Control Committee in Negative Land. Is that there's a set of people that will take the sources and really mess with them, and I'm quite happy taking them quite far away. And there's people who want to put like Britney over, over Madonna, or Britney over AC/DC, and they want them to sound exactly the same as they were, on the record. And what I like about your albums is you're quite happy to put, extra vocals in and actually make it into almost like a whole thing that blends in as a whole as well, and makes it very kind of, organic, very kind of but different. We're more cut up in a way.
I don't know, it's strange. I mean, we do, I don't, the temptation to kind of overlay drum loops and stuff like that is like, it's not something that we're really into doing. I mean, a lot of people that do mashups will kind of just take a few samples or a few loops from a track, and then they'll like pile in their own drum loops and stuff. And that's it's we've always tried to, you know, try to keep an essence of the original track. If the original track's got a really good, you know, really good backbeat, there's not really any point. I mean, yeah. Although a lot of people play their stuff out, there's not really a lot of point in adding additional stuff to it.
Yeah.
Don't really think it embellishes it. If anything, it dates it somewhat.
And how did you come up with the concept for the new album, 24 Hours?
It was just looking where to go next. I mean, we didn't want to do something. It was like looking at what the possible options were. There's loads of different ways of approaching doing a mix. And you can beat mash it, you can do something thematic like the Queen thing or the Flaming Lips thing, but it was like, okay, what we don't want to beat mash, we don't want to end up like, you know, sort of like running pitches up and down all over the place to try and encompass all the stuff that we like. We're not really into doing, you know, sort of a whole double mix album that's going to be 132 BPM and just run solidly all the way through. So it was thinking, well, what other ways are there that you can link that you can link tracks together? Can we try and tell a story? Can we actually try and tell a story? So we thought, okay. Well, we took something which we thought was quite simple, because we didn't want to have narration, we didn't want to have anything like that, like people pointing out the obvious things. But we also wanted something that would kind of, people could identify with, people could resonate with a bit. There was just, you know, it's just a bog standard day. It's yeah. The kind of it's something that a lot of people that a lot of people go through, and but there's, you know, there's fantasy elements in there, and there's some curious bits and pieces. But it was like, that was the crux of it, was to try and see if we could actually tell a story.
What can I say? I'm thrilled. I want to congratulate you for being on time.
Ours is a brand new world of all at once. As the new electric technologies come into play, people are less and less convinced of the importance of self-expression. Teamwork succeeds private effort.
Work it, make it, do it, makes us harder, better, faster, stronger.
I'm the smoker, off the riddler, let the fiddler play the theme, from the scene, made by DJ Supreme, eliminated, terminated, exterminated, with a star complicated, but
talk about money. Money is a subject all people all over the world have in common. So why not talk about it? If your friends don't want to talk about it, you may want to find a new group of friends. These are things I do on a regular basis. Once you begin that journey in your mind and in your heart, the rest of you should soon follow. Always remember that words are free. Hands on my side.
at some point it sort of wanders off a little bit, but it comes back at the end. Certainly cuts into almost like a dream sequence. So when this whole ambulance thing, which is my favourite bit of the album actually, the if not for the ambulance driver and imagine the end of the world, where it's kind of it's very kind of almost down but very thoughtful, and I think that works very well.
No, that was the thought. It's like, I mean, you go through all these emotions during your day. You go, I mean, people go through. One day blurs into the next, and you don't really give it that much thought. But you do go through an incredible amount of different states of mind during the day, and also there was an element of like the amount of music that people are exposed to during the day, and where it creeps in various places, whether it's playing in the background in a pub, or whether it's in a shop that you go in, or whether it's on the radio when you're at work or whatever, and all of this stuff gets kind of munched up, and then, you know, while you're asleep, you have dreams, and these fragments kind of recombine. So there was a kind of element of that, of just kind of like just actually mashing up someone's day, mashing up all the sounds that they might be they might be experiencing during the day. But at night, you kind of, when you're asleep, you kind of try and, your unconscious mind also tries to make sense of some of the more random elements of your day.
Yeah.
And it does it in a really interesting way. It makes pretty powerful use of your own imagination. So there was a big element of that. I mean, that's, you know, it's something you do while you're asleep. You mash up your day.
Yeah.
You have a dream. You wake up and you kind of think, wow, I've just been dreaming about two or three random things that happened, but you've collided, or people that you've met during the day, but you've collided them together at night. Which is your brain kind of, you know, it's rinsing out your day, it's rinsing out all this information that you put into it, and trying to make sense of it in a way that you can't, that, you know, well, in most ways you can't control. So there's an element of that underwriting it.
I mean, I find that what you're saying about the whole kind of ambient noise, kind of the ambient background of music, certainly because when I work, I'm a freelancer, so I get to work places that have. From Radio 1 to their MP3 collections to, you know, classical music, it's kind of, it really varies. And it does affect your mood. It does affect how you are. And the whole things about work earlier on in the album are quite funny but very true. Sort of the whole kind of, I don't know where you got all the clips. I mean, there's obviously things like Wall Street in there and a few other things.
Yeah, quite a few bits. I did some location recordings as well, which is really, really good fun.
Yeah.
I got a set of binaural microphones, which are embedded in headphones.
Cool.
So you can kind of, I mean, I don't know what you know about binaural technology, but the idea is that there's kind of like a dummy head in between the two microphones,
yeah,
which tries to simulate more the kind of experience that you get from your own ears, basically, because your own head acts as a baffle, which means if you hear something in your left ear, it's very, very distant in the right ear. But the use of these headphones, microphones, is you can just walk around, it just looks like you're wearing a pair of headphones.
Yeah.
So I could walk around at work with these headphones attached to, you know, I could walk in the street with these headphones attached to a mini disc recorder, and it just looked like I was wearing a pair of headphones. So no, it wasn't like I had a big microphone or, you know, even a clip mic. But it picked it up in really good stereo, which was great. So a lot of the parts, like in the introduction with the sort of getting up and moving around, and the street sounds and stuff like that, a lot of that was recorded using those.
So is actually partly a document of your day as well?
Yeah, pretty much. I think so. Yeah, you could probably safely say that. I really wanted to include some noise from my own workplace. I mean, I have a day job, so I work in that office that's pictured. not that I go through all those situations, but you know, a lot of that comes from personal experience. So, and I wanted to, although it's very brief, there's very brief snippets, kind of sort of background conversation, I didn't really want anything to come through too clearly, because I didn't want people to actually recognize their own voices and too much. A few of the people I know at work have heard it.
No, I mean, one of the voices I heard was this woman going about that would take 5 minutes or 10 minutes in GarageBand.
Oh, that's these guys did this. They did this piss take thing of Kevin Federline did a track. I mean, this is one of those weird internet situations where you don't hear the original, though, because Kevin Federline did some tune, and there was some, you know, documentary reality TV shit thing about him and Britney Spears, and you see him in the studio just playing this terrible track, and these guys did this excellent piss take of it, which came through. And I didn't see the original, but I just saw the piss take of it, where they're talking about it, and that's what they're saying, you know, so like any fool can whip this up in 10 minutes in GarageBand. Look at this fool in the mixing desk, like, sort of wanking over his pathetic little track. And then they go off and prove that you can make a track in 10 minutes that sounds exactly the same. Because that's a criticism that gets leveled at a lot of people that do mashups, is that it's kids' stuff and it takes 5 minutes and anybody can do it. And although, you know, yeah, you can put together something in 5 minutes, but it's going to sound like you took 5 minutes to do it. You know, it's really simple. So, I mean, that whole thing, and it kind of leads into that track with the Mark Bolan vocal going on about a rip-off, and the new Mark track in the background, which samples a cover version of Imagine. And so it was kind of like having a pop, and that's the sort of thing that people talk about. You know, people are talking about shit in their lunch hours, and that kind of fitted in. It was like, this is the kind of sort of conversations that people have at lunchtime when they're talking about, you know, they're talking about music, and they're talking about people ripping each other off and the sorry state of pop music. It's all the conversations that we all have every day.
How do you feel about the current state of popular music?
Very clean and nice and antiseptic and useless.
I gotta say, like, I respect artists, don't get me wrong, but this is something that anybody could whip up in 10 minutes.
And watch this moron at the mixing board, like, just love his pathetic little track.
What the hell is the matter with people nowadays? Exactly.
In the moonlight, I'm fighting with the night, it's a rip-off. Chasing on a sleigh and I'm bleeding in the rain, it's a rip-off, oh, such a rip-off. Rocking in the nude, I'm feeling such a dude, it's a rip-off. Dancing in the dark with the tramps in the park, it's a rip-off, such a rip-off, yeah. See a baby stud sliding in my mud, it's a rip-off. Please turn the beak, I wanna teach you your peach, it's a rip-off, yeah. See the girl dance in a man's skin pants, it's a rip-off. Turn a plate, tell me, wanna bang your gong, it's a rip-off.
A lot of mashups are kind of, they're political in what they're doing, because of course it's illegal, but they're not always making a point. That's what I find interesting about some of your tracks, is that they are actually making a point about something. So what kind of political stance and what kind of things are you quite happy to put in your mashups and bootlegs and mixes?
Oh, that's a really tricky question. I don't know. I mean, a lot of it should be quite obvious just from what's already gone in there. I mean, I can't really help it. I don't really consider myself to be, you know, I'm that politically knowledgeable. But I mean, part of what I like about doing collage stuff and mashup stuff is that your kind of political sensibility and your feelings about what's wrong and what's right kind of bleed through.
Yeah.
Without you even, I mean, the whole, you know, like the piece that you mentioned in Yoshimi and Question at the end of Hip Hopper and stuff like that, it wasn't really planned. It just felt right. Mm. This, you know, you put the samples together and you listen back to it and you hear the cumulative effect of it, and you just think, yeah, that says in samples what I can't say in words, and yeah. So you know that kind of works behind it. There's no real kind of, I don't know. It's just kind of trying to get people to, you know, trying to get people to look at the world is a really difficult thing, to sort of look at the world around them and realize the situation that they're in, and that's one of the uses of art is that of any kind is that it does that. It gives people a different door to open to see reality, and this is kind of this in a tiny way kind of influences what we do. Because we're just trying to say, okay, well, look at the world from a different way. Look at stuff in a different way. Find that, you know, this is entertaining, but there's a bit of trying to sort of generate a bit of thought in people's minds because they're paying attention, they're trying to listen to it. So, you know, it's entertainment, but it's educational. It's edutainment. That's the stuff. Yeah, no, I mean that comes from listening to stuff like Negative Land and people like that, and it's like it's the art of making a point without actually saying anything yourself, but just turning bushwhack stuff and things like that, turning media about on its head and using it to show, you know, to show its own stupidity. And I think that the same applies with mashups and pop music. Mashups are showing the world the stupidity of the current state of pop music and the current state of the music industry by turning it inside out and spitting it back out at it and saying, you know, this is what we think of what you're doing. And reveling in it, you know, and creating new and, you know, different forms of entertainment out of it. And, I, you know, that's why I love doing it. That's why we get off on it.
And what would you usually do at, say, 6 o'clock in the evening?
It kind of varies. I'll probably be making my tea and I'll be drinking a glass of wine. I think that would be about it. A glass of wine, a can of beer, and relaxing. I mean, that's one bit of 24 hours that is actually really true. And sticking some tunes on, really, I'm like, I'll kind of put on something like I really like Hype Machine, which is one of the MP3 blog aggregators.
Yeah.
Which covers everything. So, and that for me is my kind of evening radio, because I do love radio, but at the moment radio in England is in a real piss poor state, and it's really hard to find stuff that, you know, is worth listening to at that time of day, which is another thing that the internet has taken over. So rather than, you know, sort of, I don't really watch a massive amount of television, so rather than putting the TV news on or something like that, or putting the radio on, I'll like fire up. Hello, I'll check my email and like fire up Hype Machine.
At 6 o'clock,
President Bush's surprise message: America is addicted to.
I must have dreamed a thousand dreams. Been haunted by a million screams. Well, I can hear the marching feet. They're moving into the street. Now, did you read the news today? Too many people making too many problems. I'm not
have a serious problem.
Absolutely, listen to me.
Here we have a serious problem. Our nation has only one option. We must keep our word, defeat our enemies. The best way to break this addiction is through technology. Technology. Technology.
Well, I mean, that's something I wanted to mention, a hype machine. I wasn't sure. It's a bit like what you're saying about publicity, whether it's sort of good and bad and attention, because hype machine is brilliant, but it kind of brings together so many blogs that at some point they're going to get attention if links are OTT.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they have kind of, they've tightened up their security a lot. There used to be a way for to just sort of dig into their archives and download pretty much. They had a better archive than the guys that were doing the MP3 blogs. So you could dig into their archives and download tracks off them by kind of just navigating their Flash player. But they've tightened up their security a lot more now so again, like we were talking to before, they could, you know, they could get into trouble for, just linking to the files. But as yet, I don't, you know, to the best of my knowledge, although there's, you know, you may correct me, or somebody will probably correct me, I don't think anybody's really targeted the MP3 blogs yet, which shows a little bit of common sense on the part of record labels, because they realise that this is publicity. You know, as time goes on, it's something we always said from the get-go, from Yoshimi onwards. It's like we're publicising this music, we're publicising these bands. And, you know, I've had emails from some people saying, thank you for turning me on to the Flaming Lips. I never would have heard them if I hadn't have heard, you know, Hip Hop Robots, and I went out and checked the original album. Had emails from people saying both sides of it, like, thank you for showing me that Queen can be really good. And also from Queen fans saying, I never really listened to hip hop before until this, but now I'm going to check out more hip-hop because they found a way into it. So, you know, it's publicity. And recently, especially, there's been a spate of sort of remix projects that are coming online. I don't know if you're aware that My Life in the Bush of Ghosts is by David Byrne and Brian Eno. It's going to be re-released, and they're putting the master tracks for two of the tracks on the album.
Yeah, I heard about that. I did.
It's a sign of the future. It's a sign of, like, they're just looking at it as a marketing opportunity. But as the fact that they're prepared to accept that as a marketing opportunity means that we're actually one step nearer winning the battle. I mean, I know David Byrne is quite vocal on the internet about his opinions and so forth. I get the feeling that he would welcome the opportunity for people to remix his stuff with open arms.
No, there's quite a few where I just kind of got to hear the original track, or really got to listen to the original track more because of a bootleg, and then I'll hear it and it'll be like, you know, oh, you know, every time I hear it, then it's just not the same. It doesn't sound right.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, that goes back to things like Stroke of Genius and stuff like that, which is just like, you know, the ultimate in that. I mean, not that I never really cared for either of the original tunes, but then you know, you're just suddenly like, whoa, that's so good. You've created something which is, well, as you said before, it's better than the sum of its parts. There's not many. I don't know. That's something that kind of bypasses a lot of people, I think. Now they don't. It's such a technical achievement to actually get the tracks together that people just kind of go, well, fuck it. At least I've got the tracks together. But I don't know. I kind of wish that more people were kind of would involve a little bit more of their own personalities and what's going on, because everyone is very outspoken. If you look on Gaibo and stuff like that, everyone is full of bursting full of opinions. I think it's, you know, kind of willing people to involve that in their own creativity, to get that in there, because it's a wasted opportunity otherwise. I really think so anyway. I don't, just sort of like, you know, come on, find a way to put yourself in this. It may be 50% of one person's track, 50% of the other person's track, but make it 49.5% and get 1% of yourself in there. Whether it's musical style or whether it's, you know, as we do with, like, you sort of using spoken word samples or something like that, find a way to get yourself in there, because that's, you know, that's what's going to define you. That's what's going to make you different to everybody else. That's what's going to give you your personality. I mean, that's, you know, well, that's just the way I think, you know. I mean, a lot of people will probably be like, you know, oh, fuck that, it's not really worth doing. I'm just trying to make something, you know, I can play out to kind of impress the club that I DJ at.
Feel like when you're dancing.
So it feels good. So stiffen them. But once I get going, then I like forget everything. So I disappear. I can feel a change in my whole body. Like this fire in my body. Just there.
Nightlife.
Honey, bring it close to me. Yeah, honey, bring it close.
close to my a honey bring it 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 close to my
I mean, I always find that interesting that it's the old school. It's the Doors. It's, you know, like with the Rapture Riders, with the Gohan Productions, it's Doors, it's Blondie, it's Bowie, it's, you know, it's David Byrne. They're the ones that seem to be quite cool with this. It's the newer acts that have a real problem.
I don't know. There's a kind of divide there. There's a, I mean, people like the Doors and Blondie, bless them both, you know, fantastic bands, but they have no new, very little new content. So this for them is a way of generating interest in their back catalogue, which is, you know, which is fine and dandy. I mean, I posted the same thing on the almost same thought on my blog, saying, you know, record companies look to us for ways of, you know, give us the ability to remix your back catalogue from artists that, like the Doors, that can't make any more records. And we will do something for you. We can help you, you know, we can find new audiences for this sort of stuff indirectly through the creating the art that we want to create. We fulfill ourselves artistically, but at the same time, we're doing you a favor for letting us loose on your stuff. But with people like, I'm kind of trying to remember some of the other artists you mentioned, people like David Byrne or Brian Eno. My Life in the Bush of Ghosts is one of the very first records that actually used unclear. There's some, I don't know how much attempt they went to actually clear some of the samples that they used in that. They were using found sound. They were using like sounds of Preachers, the famous track Quran that wasn't included on the album because it used the Muslim call to prayer and had to be removed. They have an artistic sympathy with what modern remixers are trying to do because they've already been there. They were there 22, 23 years ago. And it's an opportunity for people like us to actually get out there and get out of internet land and get onto the regular airwaves and do this sort of stuff and take it out of the realms of people like Eddie or James Hyman and stuff like that. But just showing people that this is, it's not a novelty. This is an ongoing thing. This is, you know, this is as much a style of music now as trip hop or turntablism or anything like that. And it's going to carry on. It's going to kind of fade and grow in, you know, for its devotees, in the same way that, you know, sort of drum and bass is a kind of dirty word now in England, but there are still, you know, a large amount of drum and bass fans, whereas at one point it was, you know, it was the savior of the music industry, and those things are going to happen. But you know, we've just got kind of, everyone's got to get on the case and sort it out.
Well, I mean, I find that's happened already in the UK, and we're kind of now in this sort of thing where it's because of the US getting interested, it's almost bringing UK along again.
Yeah, no, I mean, a large amount of the people that have, the major bulk of the emails that I get are from America, but from a wide-ranging bunch of people in America, from other DJs, from like people that work in studios and stuff like that, like guys that do a whole, people that do a whole range of, you know, a whole range of stuff. Americans have a better grasp on longevity. It's a big island. Therefore, it takes a long time outside of San Francisco and New York. It takes a long time for something to filter through the country. And that's kind of ingrained in their culture. England is very, very good at chucking stuff as soon as it's made it. As soon as you've got a number one, there's a backlash, you know? You know, the DRT Monkeys are already in the middle of a huge backlash, which is a bit insulting. And, you know, the Kaiser Chiefs are yesterday's people, whereas a year ago, which is not very long at all, they were, you know, everyone was listening to them. And that's, although it makes for a great turnaround of culture and talent, at the same time, there's not very much time to kind of, to allow people to find their feet. So it's a bit of a shame, and you really have to kind of, I don't know, you have to kind of go against the groove a little bit to allow yourself a little bit more time to develop. That's, you know, that's a major complaint about the record industry in general, is that there's no time. You have a hit in 6 months or you're on the street, which can be heartbreaking. I mean, it's the main reason that, you know, I've played in bands. It's the main reason I don't play in bands anymore. Is because I don't really feel the desire to do that, to play that game. It's we're kind of blessed that we have the opportunity, we have a platform that we can rebel on. You know, we have a method to get our stuff out that I don't know if any of us would have bothered if it hadn't been for the internet, if anybody would have actually, you know, sort of bothered to get their music out.
I mean, I worry about the Arctic Monkeys, because they've got so famous so quickly. That it's kind of, I mean, I don't really like Alex's voice. The songs are all right, but I don't really like his voice. But there's so many bands around that area that are now getting attention, which is quite interesting. So there's almost like a Sheffield and sort of Sheffield, Wakefield sort of, you know, whole sort of scene around there because of that, which is a positive thing.
That's kind of cool that it encourages that interest, but I don't know, this sort of thing has been going on for a long time, although for younger bands it's not, and they're not familiar with the territory, so they're kind of, you know, they're as liable to get taken into things as any other youth is. I mean, I'm not a young person, I've done this a few times, so I feel like reasonably experienced in just seeing the way that the cycle turns. And I mean, like the Kaiser Chiefs were last year's huge thing, and I feel really bad for them, because I think that, you know, I like them, I like the Arctics, I think they're really talented, but I don't know, you know, the pressure is now phenomenal on them to actually create the next thing that they're going to do, and if it flops, they're going to be forever labeled as one hit wonders. And that's just, that's god awful. It's a really, it's a terrible situation and hideous pressure to be in if you're 19 or you're 20, to have all these people that have just suddenly discovered you as this new cash cow, which is what, you know, the Arctic Monkeys in effect are for their record label, or the Kaisers are. And you suddenly think, wow, I've got the, you know, there's the employment of about 300 or 400 people dependent on the next thing that I do, and that's an incredible amount of responsibility to place on the head of somebody that not only is trying to be creative, but is, you know, to actually expect them to do it. But unfortunately, it's becoming the norm rather than, you know, nobody objects to it anymore, and yeah. Most record companies are now almost, it's quite, and it's one thing I love about the whole kind of indie revival in the last few years is, it's turning the record industry away from the pop idol people and making people realise that, that they're isolating the market that they're supposed to be selling to. I mean, it's people go on pop idol and before they've even sung a note, they're signed up to a contract, which in effect gives away a huge proportion of what they're going to do. It gives them no creative control whatsoever over their careers, and they're just told, you know, like it or lump it. If you don't like it, you don't get on this TV show. So most people sign up the contracts and just get on with it, which is, you know, it's the equivalent of, you know, sort of like poor black artists in the 50s and people like Ike Turner or Chuck Berry or even Elvis Presley, just like signing whatever piece of paper got put in front of them just so that they were able to make a record, which is terrifying. You know, we've come full circle in about 50 years and we've come back to a really exploitative music industry. Which, you know, at its midpoint in the sort of late 60s, early 70s, was incredibly free and incredibly creative. It was the musicians that were leading the way, but now it's gone back to it's the labels that lead the way, and if you don't do it the labels way, you can fuck off, because there's going to be somebody else at the doorstep in 5 minutes' time that will happily say yes and will happily sign the contracts. And, you know, that's a real shame. That's why, you know, that's why I'm here talking to you, and that's why we're doing this, or why I'm doing this anyway. Because you need to find an alternate method for, you know, to get your stuff out to people.
Well, I'm always surprised that there's so many bands like Hi-Fi and, you know, recorded a whole album and they've actually then taken it to a label and then they've signed, oh no, this is great. And it's like, well, why are you doing it that way? Either do, you know, why don't you just put it out yourself, or why don't you just license it to them, not have a contract? You don't need a contract. If you're actually recording and creating your own albums, you don't actually need to sign with a record label. You just have a distribution deal.
It's all down to marketing, really. I mean this is something that I've had from my dealings with major labels prior to this, is the amount of money that the label invests in you. It doesn't invest it in you for the music. It invests it in marketing. It's telling people that don't know what to buy. Telling people, there was a wonderful quote that I saw on someone's blog from a guy called T-Bone Burnett, who's a producer, who was like just saying, you know, that like the music business struck gold when they learned how to sell records to people that don't like music, people that are not music fans, that just buy records now and again to kind of as status symbols, as bits of cool. And as soon as you learn, and also to kids, and as soon as you learn how to sell records to those sorts of people, you don't need to waste time selling records to people that actually like music anymore. There's no point, because they're a real minority. You know, the majority of people, and this, you know, this bled slightly into some of the tracks on 24 Hours, especially like the George Michael thing.
It's Friday night on the channel that rocks. We are top 20 chart, it's Top of the Pops. So line them up and roll up the 20 kids. Blaze your buckets and bongs to the nation's favourite tunes and songs. It's a blur of burberry here in the studio, and I've already had me watch twat. Divin fall asleep at the wheel, it's number one exclusive in a steal. We've got John, not Paul, got George and not Ringo.
Chart countdown. This is number one.
Number one. This week's number one. Number one.
It's all the same. Only the
some real good commercials coming right up. I swear.
Hey. Hey. You a dreamer?
Yeah.
Haven't seen too many of you around lately. Things have been tough lately for dreamers. They say dreaming's dead. And no one does it anymore. It's not dead, it's just it's been forgotten. Removed from our language. Nobody teaches it, so no one knows it exists. The dreamer's banished to obscurity. I'm trying to change all that, and I hope you are too. By dreaming, every day. Dreaming with our hands and dreaming with our minds. Our planet is facing the greatest problems it's ever faced. Ever. So whatever you do, don't be bored. This is absolutely the most exciting time we could have possibly hoped to be alive. Things have just started.
The only way that we can kind of progress, I mean, people, as time goes on, mashups is now kind of, I mean, some of the, a couple of bits of feedback that I've got from 24 hours, people are saying, oh, the Kleptones transcending the fad. And it's really, you know, for people that are involved in doing mashups and stuff like that, to consider it a fad is, you know, it's an insult, really, because you don't realize how much time I've spent on this tune, man, fucking hell, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's a means to an end, like anything. It's a way, like all music or all art is, it's a way of getting your style and your personality across. And you really, you know, like I just said, people really need to work on that. The best people that are doing stuff are working in and around that. You know, they're using it to their advantage. And some people do. You know, they maybe don't feel comfortable enough to kind of put their own personality in there. But when they do, it shines through. You know, it really shines through. Some of the best, you know, some of the best bootlegs that are around at the moment are being done by people that are really that are being a little bit more adventurous. And like a lot of the stuff that I like at the moment, it's like some of the French guys, people like DJ Zebra and DJ Moule, who are like really, and they're brilliant. Like Zebra does lots of French vocal mix, isn't it? That's his, you know, that's his style. He's a French guy. He's going to do that. He's going to bring in Rachid Taha and people like that, and you know, mix up his own reality, his own culture, his own style into his own mixing, which is fantastic. I mean, a lot of it, I don't get the cultural references, but the tracks, I mean, there's one he did with Nacapella of Rachid Taha's cover version of Rock the Casbah, which is fantastic. Yeah. And also there's, you know, his Are You Gonna Be My Motherfucker, which is just phenomenal. And I still, you know, I've just come back from a week in France where I've been DJing, and I play that, you know, probably about every second or third set, because it just kills people. It destroys, it totally kills the crowd every time. People go bananas to that, but it's just a slightly different take on stuff. In the same way that, like, the, you know, like Party Ben and the Booty Lot, they have a more American take on things. But for them, it's very danceable. For Ben, it's very radio oriented. For the Booty Lot, it's very club oriented. And that's, I DJ out now and again, but I don't really make a big thing out of it. Although, you know, it's getting to be more and more fun as time goes on. The Kleptones stuff is never really, the primary thing is not as danceable stuff at all. And it never has been. Which is a kind of a bugger when you play stuff out, because it doesn't really kind of fit into any regular kind of DJ set. But that's, you know, it's never really been the point. I don't really think, you know, I don't know what would happen if I actually tried to make a dance floor record, how that would come out. I'd probably get bored about two or three tunes in, and just like trying to sort of like, oh god, I'm sick of this beat. But I do DJ. You know, I love to DJ. But only occasionally do I actually play mashups. And I think that kind of throws people. I'd much rather just kind of like fuck up other tunes and mix them up that way. You know, sort of in Ableton or Traktor or something like that. It seems a bit of a cop out to actually play my own stuff. But maybe I'm just shy.
Do you come from an art school background? Because I kind of had a was taught juxtaposition and things like that when I did my art degree.
No, not at all. My background is my degree is in science, so I come from a more scientific background. Although I've spent my whole life kind of involved in music and absorbing that, but everything's kind of self-taught, which I'm pretty much grateful for. Because I like you say, you were taught about things like juxtaposition. I kind of found that out for myself, you know. This goes back sort of, you know, to when I was a teenager, and I was sort of, this was a way for me to explore that sort of stuff. So I would have kind of picked it up as I've gone along. I don't know if I'd have felt the same way about it if I'd have found out that people have been doing this for years in various different forms. It wouldn't have had the freshness, I think, that it does. If I'd have known the history of it, although since, you know, the more you do it, the more you find out about it.
Well, I mean, I'm quite proud of the fact that I have had no musical training. I mean, in a way, mashups and sort of cut-ups for me are kind of me getting into that. So it's kind of a punk thing. It's like I'm getting into that because it doesn't need any musical training necessarily, although it helps.
Well, you need to have an ear, you know. I mean, I don't know, a lot of people, in the same way that a lot of DJs, and this goes back to, you know, to people like Cole Cut or Andy Weatherall, people like that, who again probably had very little musical training, but they have an ear. They have an ear for what sounds good together. And you find that really, if you haven't got that, it doesn't matter how good a musician you are, you can't compose, you can't write. So it's one is not necessarily a prerequisite of the other, you know.
I mean, the reason why I was asking is because it's Burrows and Negative Land and this whole sort of juxtaposing two things to make a third thing, and that third thing was better than the other two, especially with popular culture. Is it you almost take that and make it a third thing, but it's almost criticising its sources as well?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, like I said, it's being able to turn it inside out and spit it back. I mean, it's really not... I don't know. I mean, like I said, it's not the intention is to make something that sounds good above all. I mean, that's probably where it differs, where like mashups differ from people like Evolution Control or Negative Land, and people like that, because if they make something that sounds confusing, but it achieves their purpose, they're still happy. Whereas when you're doing mashups, the primary thing is to make a piece of music, is to create a piece of pop music. And it's something that will draw the listener in. So in a way, the motivations are slightly different. I don't know. I think so, anyway.
Well, it's like one is trying to... the whole aim is recognisability with sort of a lot of mashup people. And the aim seems to be with another set of people is to actually just almost totally destroy their sources.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the recognizability thing is, I mean, we're not really bothered about whether or not people know the tunes. It's not an essential. I don't know, a lot of people generally tend to think that one of the important things about mashups is that there's something there that people already know. And I don't really think that's important. In a way, a lot of the tunes that we've done that I like the best are ones where the source material is a little bit more obscure. There's one on 24 Hours, which is a mix of Roots Maneuver and Quicksilver Messenger Service, which just astonished me when we put it together, because it just flowed so perfectly. But I mean, people might recognise the Roots Maneuver thing, but I don't really think that many people are going to recognise the Quicksilver track. But it just sounded like a great combination. I mean, I find it fascinating. I'm sure that kind of bleeds through. You know, it bleeds through in the work. But just when you do this kind of juxtaposition, it's kind of inevitable that this sort of stuff comes along. But again, it's another way of poking fun at it, and also demonstrating the parallels between what we're, like I said, between what we're doing and what songwriters have always done, like what Brian Wilson did with Surfing USA, and ripped off a Chuck Berry riff, which Chuck Berry, you know, quite gleefully sued him for an incredible amount of money over. So, you know, this, and the Beatles, who always acknowledged that they're the biggest plagiarists on the planet at the time, because they were just ripping off Motown tunes and just kind of and things like that, and turning them back to front. But you know, they cover their tracks and they do it in their own way.
I can probably guess what you'd be doing at 2:45 a.m. in the morning.
On an average day, I'd probably be telling myself it's time to go to bed. For the past few weeks, just getting 24 Hours finished, it's meant a lot of 18-19 hour days, just sort of doing a day job and then going home and then spending sort of 7 or 8 hours working in the studio in the evening. If it's a weekend night, then I'll probably be drunk on the street somewhere looking for a party.
If not for you, babe, I couldn't even find the door. Couldn't even see the floor. I'd be sad and blue. If not for you, babe, the night would see me wide awake. It would not be new if not for you. out for you. The winter would hold no spring, couldn't hear a robin sing, I wouldn't have a clue. If not for you, babe, I couldn't even find the door, couldn't even see the floor. I'd be sad and blue if not for you.
So, moving on to Disney, what happened with that whole sort of C&D business?
It kind of petered out. It was quite a shock when it happened, but it was really unusual. I mean, I really, like, we considered kind of doing a protest thing, but thought we wanted to see how it would go on. And looking at this, when we looked at the C&D that Andy had got, Andy Bio from Waxy.org, it was a kind of it was a shot across the bows, really, but obviously one that you couldn't ignore. So but since then, I mean, it's nothing further has come of it. But I think Andy did because he really publicly announced on his website there was like links with Queen and names of tracks in big letters. So it was really obvious that the stuff was there. Something that we've always tried to do on the website, for better and for worse, because a lot of people have criticised us for not revealing our source material, is that the site is a little bit more vague. There's no direct mentions to any of the artists that we sample on the site.
Yeah.
And that's consciously to try and keep us alive for a little bit longer, really, just to stop people from the kind of people that get paid a reasonable amount of money to spend all day looking at websites and then firing off cease and desist letters, whether it's Dean Gray or whether it's like Guy Bowe, just to kind of fire all these warning shots off. And there are companies now that are set up predominantly to prowl the internet for people that are breaking copyright, and they don't see the difference between somebody that's putting up an available album, somebody that's putting up a bootleg that they've recorded, somebody that's putting up a mashup. Their instructions are just to look for examples of copyright infringement and report back. So that I don't know. It's, I mean, part also because we've kind of moved away from doing single artist stuff. That's also, I think, kind of helped in sort of in us avoiding getting any more legal action as well.
I mean, I do the same with Mutant Pop, because for a long time I was getting a lot of hits because I was saying by the side of every track, sort of saying, you know, Queen versus, you know, 50 cent or something like that. And nowadays I just tend to just talk, I link to the sort of the mashup artist, and I'll mention the name of the mashup, but I won't actually talk about the artist. I'll only talk about that inside the podcast. And I think, you know, if a service has actually gone to the bother of downloading this podcast and listening to it, then I'm in deep shit anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of assuming that you haven't gone out and got yourself a podcast license.
No.
Like, I don't know. I haven't listened to Adam Curry for ages, so I don't know what the current state of affairs is on that. But it's a strange situation, and it's getting worse. I mean, I was mortified when I found out that McSleazy had been approached and warned. And that really, that totally mortified me, because Gaibo is such a, you know, it's such a vibrant place, although it veers from insanity to genius. But to have those sorts of places threatened is really dangerous, and it sets a really dangerous precedent, unfortunately, for all of us.
Well, I mean, what I found very odd about that precedent is that it was about linking to files that weren't even on your server. Before, usually it's all been about your server and you're hosting these files, please take them down. Now they seem to be going after the sites which link to them, which is quite strange.
Well, yeah, totally. Well, even the hip hopera thing with Waxy was, he wasn't even really, he was just providing links to another server where the files were, but unfortunately the people that are issuing the cease and desist have got a little bit cleverer, and rather than just going at the site, they're going at the ISPs. And that means, you know, that you don't want to lose your host, you know. I mean, even my host puts warnings out regularly. I'm not saying who that is, but I mean, anybody that's got a bit of nous can find out. Puts regular warnings saying, please don't put copyrighted material up, because, you know, we spend all day dealing with this sort of stuff, and we don't want to have to bug you. And if it comes to the crunch, we'll turn your site off. And that's, you know, that's the way things are now. In a couple of years, the sort of doomsayer in me says that situation is going to get a lot worse. It's going to become a lot harder for people, I think, to host their stuff as time goes on, or to find places where they can get their stuff up.
If you don't like it, don't listen to it, don't read it, don't watch it. Without free communication, you don't have a free society. Democracy is based on it.
Did a Tubes for Animals dancehall track before. I think he did an.
Yeah, that's right.
He did another one.
It was juxtaposed with you, and then. That was great. That's really good, and I love the Furries as well. They're an amazing band, and they're just such good fun, such great people as well. And so that was really funny. Although the one on 24 Hours was just hysterical. I still can't believe that, like, it's not the end of the world. It is Imagine, and it is really it's just completely rearranged, but the chords are exactly the same. You feel kind of guilty when you do a mashup occasionally, and you kind of luck, like Party Ben's Boulevard of Broken Songs, when you kind of realise that there are like three or four tunes that are just complete rip-offs of each other. And it gives you food for thought when you're battling cease and desists and stuff like that. The people have been doing this for years. People have been doing this for centuries. I mean, you know, this is the way of music. We're just using the tools that are available to us and updating it in a new way. So it's still hilarious when you do actually put two things together and you see that how closely they fit. It's quite hilarious, but it's testament to the Super Furries that they managed to create a new song, that they managed to create a new arrangement and a new style out of something that in effect is the same chords as Imagine.
Oh,
So it's been good to talk.
Bloody hell, sorry, I'm sorry, I waffle. I apologise.
Oh, you're talking to the King Waffle, the King Rambler. So don't worry about it. That's what my editing skills are for. So thanks a lot for that. That's Eric from the Kleptones, and or is this this should be billed as the Kleptones entity, or is it just Eric from the Kleptones?
Oh no, it's just me. I mean, if you're talking to me in person, then. As they say in when you see something, this is a personal opinion and should not be representative of the you know, the collective or the organisation. It's always a personal opinion with me.
So thank you to Eric Clapton for the interview. I hope you enjoyed this. You can find out more about Radio Clash by going to mutantpop.net/radioclash. You can email me at radioclash@mutantpop.net. I'd love to get feedback. People talking to me. Yes, people don't talk to me usually. Yes, they avoid me. They shuffle away in the street. And you can phone me on 206-202-5274, or you can phone the UK Clash line, which is 0700-850-524. Hopefully still working. Give it a call anyway. I will be back with a normal show next show. I think it's going to be the Tim and Kirk show, so it's going to be very different from this one. So until next time, I'll speak to you soon.
The day, follow me into the trees. I will lead the way. Bring some change up to the bridge. Bring some alcohol. There we'll make a final wish just before the fall. Done is done, always was a lucky one.